Next slide. All right, so we have done quite a bit since last IETF. There was an overhaul to make it really RESTful. We talked a lot about it at the interim meeting. I'll recap that briefly on the next slide. There was also some follow-up from that since the interim meeting and prior to the interop event, so I can go over the changes there. And then there's a couple other items to discuss at the end for what were things to come and one discussion item at the end. Next slide. All right, so the first major change was to make it really RESTful. There was a bunch of other minor sort of important changes that went into that as well. I won't go through each one of them explicitly. It was sort of an overhaul of the document, making sure that we were progressing towards something where all of our I's were dotted and T's were crossed. So if you have questions on those, we can go over them, but we probably don't have to go through them in detail. Next slide. So I can go over, I'll briefly recap the newer RESTful design. Basically, the Alto server exposes an information resource directory, and inside of this directory it says all the resources that it's willing to offer, and each one is identified by its media type, and for some of them, the media type that it accepts as parameters via a post. And in this directory, the Alto client is expected to look and figure out which one it wants and then figure out the URI that it needs to go to for that resource. The directories you can have references to other directories if you want. They can be references to directories on other servers. The Alto client is expected to discover these via HTTP options. If the client screws up and requests something that it really has multiple resources, then the server returns a multiple options error code. That's basically the idea. Next slide. Here's a couple of short examples. So this is a resource entry for the network map. You see the media, it explicitly lists the media types offered by this URI, which is a network map. Next slide. Here's one for a cost map. So it lists the cost modes and the cost types that are offered by this URI in the capabilities. And next slide. And finally, here's one where it's a cost map, but it's the endpoint cost map, but it also accepts parameters via a post. So there's an accepts item there, which lists the media types that this URI is willing to accept. And you also see that it has another capability that lets you specify cost constraints. If this endpoint really does support cost constraints, you mark it there. Next slide. All right. So the changes since that overhaul, so there was a simplification we made to ordinal costs. So it was previously unspecified whether these had to be contiguous or not. So I think the decision was that these they don't necessarily have to be contiguous, and this makes life a little bit easier for Alto servers that expose numerical maps and clients who are only want the ordinal rankings off of that. They can figure out the ordinal rankings based on a set of numbers that are not necessarily contiguous. We renamed JSON syntax to eSyntax because it also can include syntax errors in certain identifiers like IP addresses. There was some ambiguities when you're asking an Alto server for the endpoint cost for a certain set of IP addresses. And for a certain address, there might be multiple textual representations. So we clarified that the Alto server doesn't really have to return you in the same representation that you gave it. So the Alto server can actually convert it internally to binary and doesn't have to remember how it converted it into binary in the first place. It will use its standard serialization when it puts the response back out. And there's just text that cautions clients against this, that they have to handle this. Next slide. There was also clarification that if you want to discover additional resources, you really should use HTTP options. It was seen as the more elegant way to do this as opposed to expecting this error code for multiple options in the response. For cost constraints, previously we didn't have cost constraints documented for filtered cost maps and endpoint cost services, though it was intended to be there. in the capabilities, so that's fixed. There were some other small cleanups for endpoint property parameters. You have to have at least one. You have to request at least one. Requesting none doesn't really make any sense. If an endpoint gets specified multiple times, it can just get silently discarded by the server. And some other editorial changes. Next slide. So there's some outstanding items on the list that have been discussed in the past. We purposely didn't make these changes before the interop event to reduce churn. But these are multiple cost types. Sabine had a draft about these, and it seems like it's about time to see if we should include these in the document. So after this meeting, it would be nice if we could sort of revive those threads on the mailing list and actually go and make these changes if it's deemed that we should. So one is multiple cost types. One is opaque cost types, where when you register a cost type, it doesn't necessarily have to be a number. You could register something else, like a property of a certain pair of source and destination, like a string or some other JSON data type. Properties associated with PIDs, an additional filtering criteria when you're getting a network map saying you're only interested in, for example, IPv4, then you don't have to deal with receiving and parsing all the IPv6 addresses as well. Some other minor to-do items that just hadn't yet made it in, which was more explicit documentation for the error codes in certain for certain cases. From the interop event, I don't think we really had too much problems with those, but it still makes sense to document them and making it possible to do base64 encoding in PID names if an implementation wishes to do that. Which basically means adding another character to the characters that we allow for those. Next slide.
Rich, one thing I don't see in this list, and that, as far as I remember, was something that's been discussed several times, is incremental updates.
Yes.
Did we reach, probably haven't done my homework properly, but I don't remember we reached consensus for dropping it, or...
So I don't think it... was ever discussed to see whether we should put it in the protocol now or not. There's a couple of ways we could go forward with that. One is to do it as an extension. Another way is to do it in the draft here. I don't think we've had that discussion, though.
Okay. Because I'm asking this because I've heard from several people that are now in this room that may be an important feature. So, yeah, if you want to comment.
Yeah, we discussed briefly this at the last meeting. I think there is some form of consensus to say that incremental updates must be available at some point, but the consensus was not yet reached on what is the best place to work on incremental updates extension. I mean, either an extension or integrate this into the current version. But it's yeah. Evident, I believe, to everyone, at least every implementer, that incremental updates is something that we have to do.
Right. I think that's my recollection as well.
So. Okay, and that boils down to the mandatory against versus optional features, right?
Yes, and whether that also goes into which one should be extension documents and which one should be in this document.
Okay.
But before we discuss, but we don't have a draft yet on incremental updates at all. Right. So if we're going to do that, either we need to do the work to put it in the protocol document or there has to be an extension document for it.
Yeah, but, of course, if people want to put it in the core document as must support feature, it is probably the right time or about the right time to ask a question to the working group. So if... people have opinions in this room, especially for including incremental updates in the core protocol, so as a feature that every Alto server must implement since day one. We would probably restate the question on a mailing list. We could certainly do that. But if you have opinions right now, we can have a discussion, a short discussion at this point. We will reiterate the question on the mailing list.
I have an opinion regarding the IP address format, and I implemented a client in three different languages and also implemented in the server. I find it's a very cumbersome for the client to take the responsibility to converting the IP address back forth, even for looking for a simple answer. Say, okay, if this IP address is in the response. And especially for IPv6 address, there's various different format. The server, on the other hand, on the server side, it's very easy for the server to link original format and the internal format stored in the server database. So I think that the move will shift the complexity from the client side to the server side will make it easier to adopt auto server in auto protocol in various applications from set-top box to the mobile device and very kind of applications. That's my comments regarding the IP address format. Thank you.
Okay, so I'll just make the comment. I think it's the way that it is now, the complexity just shifts to the client. If it's in the server, then you're shifting the complexity to a place that's potentially handling many, many, many orders of magnitude more requests.
Manish Dimaling, sorry. Just channel Sebastian's opinion, who is also like second this comment, and I second the comment too. And maybe you increase the complexity on the server side, but if you return something to a client, what the client doesn't understand, how does it help the client? Because the client, then it would at least add to something in their protocol saying, client must be ready to understand this encoding. So
it's a single encoding. I think it comes down to whether the client is dealing this as the IP address as a text string, or whether it's dealing with a set of 4 bytes or not. Right? Yeah. It's how the client is dealing with it internally and how it's matching it. Right.
For the server implementation, the server has to convert whatever the client format into its internal format, because the server cannot expect what format coming from the client. Mm-hmm. It's easier for them to match, okay, this is from the original request, this is the internal format. When the answer comes back from internal lookup, you can easily do a linkage there. That's it. That's not much difficulty to do this kind of reverse mapping if even you send a request to a different server.
Right, so that's supposing that, I mean, I could imagine server implementations which take it off the wire, convert it to an internal format, send it off to a backend server for processing, then send it back and then put the response back. And tracing back or continuing the linkage of the original format and figuring out what in that seems like quite a bit more work than it needs to be. That, I mean, this is my personal opinion. Obviously, if the work revealed otherwise, then, I mean, that wins, but.
Benjamin Jenkins. My worry with returning it in the format that the client's requested it in is that, in reality, when building a server, I'm going to use a bunch of libraries to do the conversion and processing. And if I need to serialize it in a specific format, I can't rely on using a library for that, and I've got to write a whole bunch of serialization code to do that, mm-hmm. versus a well-tested, well-used library by everybody else. It sounds a bit risky versus just having some extra processing in a client.
So I think to be fair to the other side, I think and this would be the case where you're echoing back the exact address that you're getting back from the client. So the idea would be you keep that string associated with your deserialized version of that IP address, and then you echo back the string they originally gave. I think that's the implementation they had in mind. So what should we do with this? Should we dig that up more on the mailing list? Or okay, that's fine. Okay, should I give it to you if you want to explain this?
Or?
Okay, so you may have seen the email from Enrico today. Basically, the idea was that from the client's point of view, we're in a sort of an odd position if there's only a limited set of services that you can absolutely rely on from an outsourced server. Right, so if, for example, you can't do the endpoint cost service, then you have to re-implement it on the client side. Right. So I, the question that I think Enrico was posing, is this still okay, or should we go back and reevaluate this? I don't know if you want to expand on it more than I did, but...
You know, basically that's, again, the point of where do we want to shift the complexity, whether we want to shift it to the server side or the client side. And, well, actually, I never thought of JavaScript alt clients till I implemented one. So if we think also of smartphones or a set of boxes or very constrained devices, it may be infeasible to use the basic alt services that are today the only mandatory to implement services on such devices. And that could be some kind of disincentive to adopt Alto. And that was a question for the group. And it occurred to me that maybe this problem has never been tackled from that perspective. And yeah, just, I don't have a strong opinion. Just pose the question and would like to hear opinions if there are any.
So go for it.
I'm not sure I well understood your comment, Enrico. You said that we may have devices that may not be capable of implementing the full-blown stack of the protocol.
I'm saying that we may have devices that cannot always be able to download megs and megs of network maps and coast maps.
But
and they would be able to assess an Alto server only if it provided a filtering service and or an endpoint property service. And
so
my question is, are we sure we want to draw the line at that level, or should it be a bit not lower, because that's the lowest level probably where we can draw a line of between must and should or may.
Yeah, but if I take your statement, it looks like to me you want to make network and cost map optional, so you can choose between ECS and network or cost map. Or
no, I want to make filtering mandatory. I mean, I'm asking whether it is worth make filtering service mandatory, endpoint property service mandatory. I mean, I'm not saying we should do that. I'm asking whether if people have thought about it and. This from an application developer perspective.
Yeah. While I agree on your statement, so we certainly have a variety of devices that will not have the same capability, I'm not sure that putting or enlarging the mandatory amount of services compared to the optional services is going to improve anything.
Right. At the end of the day, it would be, I mean, an application will discover whether the service it is actually looking for is implemented, is provided by the server or not. My question was whether that could constitute a disincentive for implementing Alto, right? If you know that you cannot go with the basic specs, with the basic service provided by an Alto service, and that is very likely the case for mobile devices, for example.
Yeah, I think the incentive would probably be also on the economicals between who provides the service and who uses the service. I don't know, in fact.
I wouldn't go that far. I don't want to talk about economics, but yeah, if you don't have enough bandwidth or enough CPU power to process full maps, well, you're not going to download them and to use the Alto server.
It's just that I'm not sure that making everything mandatory is going
to improve. No, of course. Probably the right balance is something in between. And yeah, I would like to hear your opinion about that, what people think.
So I can see the point that there are going to be some clients that don't want to or aren't capable of processing a full map. I'm not sure that making it all mandatory fixes that. Is it not just like a marketplace problem of if people are building Aldo as a product that isn't usable by a bunch of clients, then they're not going to be incentivized, people aren't going to deploy it, and that is the incentive for them to implement the optional services. I mean, if we do go down the route, I don't have a strong opinion either way, right? I don't care that much. But if we do go down the route of making it mandatory, I think we need to be pretty clear what we mean by server. So from an implementation point of view, I might want to stand up an Alto service that offers all of that, but I wouldn't necessarily want all services running on the same server, if that makes sense.
I think the intent is that the server encompasses anything discovered from that entry point directory.
Okay, so we're talking about it as a logical server rather than... Okay.
In which case, you can offload that to physical servers as you want, right?
So look at the three optional services. I think two are different, and they are not the same. For example, for endpoint property service, there's no replacement. Okay, and basically means if the ISP wants to provide the endpoint property or not, you can make it mandatory. That means the ISP might just put in some like arbitrary text, non-valid value, non-valid, non-valid endpoint property, not known or whatever. So that's one way to look at make it mandatory, but information not really provided. So mandatory here means it must provide valid information. That's the first thing I think we probably distinguish. The second thing I look at for the other two services, the map filtering service and endpoint cost service, somehow we might be able to introduce proxies. In the sense you have a backend, let's say auto server, provide network map and cost map. And you can put a proxy to put information on network map and cost map and then serve as a proxy, for example, for mobile devices. Say, okay, this particular ISP wouldn't want to provide the map filtering or any call service, but I'm willing to do that, so therefore I introduce a proxy. I'll put information from auto server directly, and then I'll do the filtering, I'll do the endpoint call service for the clients, which are lightweight. So there are ways to solve the other two. So I feel that the three look different. Maybe can be handled slightly differently.
I mean, also if the service was provided by proxy, it would still be advertised in the resource directory, right?
It depends on who owns the proxy, right?
Yes, probably you can even use proxy. How you really communicate between the proxy and also auto server. Probably you can even communicate between the proxy and the server to announce those availability of those proxies as a special service, but still announcing the information directory. For example, ISP1, auto server, but for this really filter map, it's customized from my proxy. That's my management company doing that.
Okay. So that's one possibility. I mean, you could imagine something like an HTTP proxy where you're front-ending some arbitrary auto server in the back-end, right? And then that could implement the other services too. That's another one.
Vijay Gurbani, I think the bar to providing these services, if you make them mandatory, is not that high. I mean, endpoint property service, the default endpoint property is PID mapping anyway, right? So in the worst case, the Alto server returns your PID, and you know exactly what you're going to get from the information resource directory. Also, if you take a look at the servers we had yesterday, majority of them provided all these three services anyway. So anybody putting out an Alto server there is probably going to provide these services anyway, and I do not see why making them mandatory should inhibit anything. And in the worst case, if there's issues about what property endpoint property service to give, you just use the default properties and stuff. So I would say just make them mandatory.
Robert Varga? Well, I would say that let's make all the services optional instead, because we are discovering them either way through the information resource directory. So let's just state that every service that is provided by a server returns correct data, and let the server provide whatever services it can.
I think we should follow up on this on the mailing list. At this point, we have covered the full range of options.
Hi, my name is Dave Harrington. I'm the area director that has to take this through the IESG. Our job here is to develop standards. So if you make most of the stuff optional, you end up not having standardization. You end up having a bunch of different pieces that need to be fit together. You greatly increase the complexity. And my recommendation, and it's only a recommendation, is that you consider making as much of this a consistent answer so that things interoperate better. So I'd recommend going for required where you can, where it makes sense. Okay.
Thanks, Dave.
That was it.
No, Martin again.